Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
Americans are buying more, but the economy is still facing headwinds. Plus, what FDA advisors have to say about Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 booster shot, and how Afghan evacuees are adjusting to life on U.S. military bases as they wait for resettlement.
We also need sometimes to see American culture and also maybe finding some way to adapt to this. Also, Americans need to understand our cultures.
It's Friday, October 15th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Americans spent more online, in stores, and in restaurants in September, a sign of strong consumer demand ahead of the holiday season. The Commerce Department says retail sales were up 0.7% last month. Here's our economics reporter, David Harrison.
So all this, I think, is a pretty good sign. The consumer is doing pretty well, but there's still kind of some headwinds, you know, some things to be concerned about going ahead. Inflation has been strong, so, you know, part of that increase in spending could just be due to the fact that we're paying higher prices for stuff. And that could be a worry going forward. If inflation remains strong, you could see people start to pull back a little bit. At the same time, we have been seeing an awful lot of supply chain issues, which have meant that, you know, there's a shortage of products for people to buy, again, particularly in the auto industry. There just are very few cars on lots right now for people to buy. And that could spread to other sectors.
Stocks had their biggest weekly gains in months on the heels of strong earnings reports. Goldman Sachs reported a 60% jump in profit and a 26% increase in revenue, higher than analysts had expected. That report capped a week of big bank earnings. The S&P 500 was up 1.8% for the week, its best performance since July. The Dow added 1.6%, and the Nasdaq was up more than 2%. The killing of British lawmaker David Amos is being investigated as a possible terrorist attack. Amos was stabbed while attending a meeting at a Methodist church in his district outside London earlier today. Police say a 25-year-old suspect has been arrested. Our Max Colchester reports from London.
This is the second time in 5 years that a lawmaker here has been killed by a member of the British public, and that sparked huge shock and sadness amongst the political class, because it really brings home one of the issues here, which is that politicians here have regular meetings with local people where they can air their grievances, and this leaves them to an extent vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. Lawmakers here don't all have personal security guards, only members of the cabinet do, and there is now serious questions as to whether security here should be tightened for them.
Amos was a member of Prime Minister Boris Johnson's ruling Conservative Party. He was first elected in 1983 and was one of the longest-serving lawmakers in Britain's parliament. An expert panel advising the Food and Drug Administration is endorsing Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 booster, recommending that all adults who receive the one-shot vaccine get a second shot at least 2 months later. The FDA often follows the panel's recommendations and could clear J&J's booster within days. Meanwhile, we report exclusively that the FDA is delaying a decision on whether to authorize Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine for adolescents. The wait, according to sources, is to allow the agency time to assess whether the shot poses a greater risk of a rare inflammatory heart condition known as myocarditis. Four Nordic countries, Finland, Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, have limited use of the vaccine in younger age groups due to concerns over the rare cardiovascular side effect. And the Justice Department plans to file a request with the Supreme Court to block enforcement of Texas's controversial abortion law, the most restrictive in the nation. The court declined to prevent the law from taking effect last month. The DOJ has sued Texas and argues that its case against the state offers an easier path for the Supreme Court to intervene. Coming up, thousands of Afghan evacuees are temporarily living at U.S. Army bases as they await permanent resettlement. We'll visit Fort McCoy, which is now home to 13,000 evacuees.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace Technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. By empowering the brightest minds, GE Aerospace is reimagining engine design and advanced aircraft systems. developing hybrid electric engines, and technologies compatible with alternative fuels like sustainable aviation fuel. GE Aerospace strives every day to invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.
After a frenzied evacuation and chaotic withdrawal from Kabul, many Afghan evacuees have been given temporary residence at military bases here in the U.S. These bases, normally designed for military training, have now been transformed into small cities. In total, they're hosting more than 50,000 evacuees. And that's come with some challenges. Wall Street Journal Midwest correspondent Ben Kessling took a trip to Fort McCoy in western Wisconsin in September, where about 13,000 Afghans were being housed. And he joins me now. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Ben, can you describe Fort McCoy for us? What is life like on the base?
If you've ever been on an Army base, it looks like an Army base. It's a big, sprawling complex of fields, military equipment, barracks that seem like they were built decades ago. Men and children mostly are milling about outside in the streets. Some women, a lot of women stay inside the barracks. Kids playing soccer and frisbee on the streets, and American soldiers are sort of milling about in between, and volunteers from different volunteer groups. There's a lot of activity on the streets of Fort McCoy.
From that description, it sounds like things are going fine, but you heard from one evacuee who said that there have been some difficulties as well. Let's hear from her.
For the food, it was easy to see, okay, these are the meal that they are these people eating, so we can bring changes on the food. But some of them are more deep cultural, behavioral kind of needs. We also need sometimes to see American culture and also maybe finding some way to adapt to this. Also, Americans need to understand our culture.
So, Ben, let's talk about that. Tell us more about some of the cultural issues that she's referring to here.
At the beginning of all this, one contractor was providing a lot of shrimp dishes. So the Afghans had this completely foreign food in so many ways. And some didn't want to eat it. Some didn't know what it was. And they ended up not eating it. And, you know, this may seem like small things to some people, but you know, when you're taken out of your cultural context and put into another one, sometimes it's the little things that make a big difference. Even things like toilets. All the toilets on base are Western-style sit toilets. And a number of Afghans were used to Eastern-style toilets where you don't have to sit on a toilet seat to use them. And there was a cultural disconnect there that had to be worked through. To overcome some of this, the American soldiers have set up a sort of a feedback system where they use shuras. And a shura is a gathering of senior representatives in a community. And so they have these meetings where the Afghans will convey some of the issues that they're facing, some of the concerns, and then American representatives will work through that and say, hey, these are changes that we can make to things to make things more comfortable for you, or here's some things that we really can't change.
So we know that most of the Afghan evacuees had some connection to the U.S. military. They'd worked as drivers or interpreters, for example. Did you meet any of them there at Fort McCoy?
Yeah, I did meet a couple of them. I met one Afghan who had served as an interpreter for a U.S. soldier like a decade ago or something. The soldier's name is Lieutenant Colonel Joe Mickley, and he actually serves as what the Army calls a mayor for a few thousand of these Afghans on this base. It's the kind of official Army liaison. And in that job, he has been able to interact and reconnect with his old interpreter, Nasir, who he hadn't seen for years until they met again in the middle of Wisconsin at Fort McCoy.
I got a message the day before we deployed up here, and he sent me a Facebook message, and he said, "Now, sir, I am in the FOB McCoy." I said, "Oh, wow, I'm coming up there in 2 days." And so, kind of got eyes on, got to see his family. It's been great to help him and take care of him.
And Colonel Mickley and Nasir plan on staying connected even after the resettlement's complete. He hopes to help Nasir find his footing in a new life here in the United States once he gets all of his paperwork and is able to leave Fort McCoy and go on to his final destination. So they hope that it's not going to be another decade before they see each other.
So what's next for many of the Afghans who are now living on this base? What do we know about the timeline for them to get off and actually resettle?
The understanding was things would move along pretty quickly, maybe within weeks, by the end of the year, possibly, but no one knows when the end timeline is. Department of Homeland Security, who is in charge of the entire effort, has said there is no hard and fast timeline. We're working to get it done when we can get it done. And we're coming into a Wisconsin winter. And if you know Wisconsin winter, it gets cold and it gets snowy. And some of the Afghans on this base have politely turned down the offer for winter boots because they fully expect it to leave the base by the time winter sets in. But up in Wisconsin, it's already starting to get cold, and the soldiers up there have made sure that the Afghans, as polite as they are, know that they should take those winter boots because they might be there for a while. Nevertheless, a lot of them are overjoyed to be in the United States. A lot of them are happy to finally be in this process. And some of them have a real hope for the future. And no matter what's happening to them right now, they are optimists. One woman I met, Farzana, she was a member of the Afghan women's Paralympic basketball team.
I continue and I work it with for my better future. This is my wish. I can again start at my wheelchair basketball and go to the college. I can invite my family in here to make a good future for myself with my family.
So Farzana's hope is much like a number of the other people that we met with, but the visit was curated. It was controlled closely by the military. We weren't able to talk to everyone, and in my reporting, we are talking to other people who have concerns about what's going to happen to them in the future. But everyone we talk to does have sort of this enduring hope, and the process is far from complete. And we need to make sure that we pay attention to it as it continues. And as these tens of thousands of Afghans try to work through the system and move on to their final locations.
Ben Kessling is a Midwest correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you so much, Ben.
Thank you very much.
And finally, for people who have replaced milk with non-dairy oat milk, we've got some bad news. WSJ Markets reporter Hartika Singh says oat futures are on the rise.
One of the biggest drivers of these higher prices right now is this drought in the Great Northern Plains. So Great Northern Plains contains some of the key oats producing areas from where the U.S. gets its oats from, such as North Dakota, some provinces in Canada, Iowa. Right now, the prices are double of where they used to be last year and even the year before that.
Those higher prices are not just hitting drinkers of oat milk. They're also impacting breakfast eaters, bakers, and farmers who use oats as feed for livestock and poultry. And that's what's news for this week. Our hosts are me, Anne-Marie Fertoli, and Peter Granitz. The show was produced this week by Trinae Nori, Kate Bullivant, and Anthony Bansi, with help from Julie Chang, Charlie Turner, and J.R. Whalen, and editorial support from Paolo Bonsonen, Sandra Kilhoff, Chris Sinsley, and Kateri Yoakum. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.
Planes powered by GE Aerospace technology take off every 2 seconds, and nearly 3 billion people flew last year with our technology under wing. As a new independently traded company on the New York Stock Exchange, our purpose remains: invent the future of flight, lift people up, and bring them home safely.